everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, president of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and I want to welcome you to this very, very special live broadcast called Social Chaos, Escape, and Evasion. Now, the purpose of this topic of the conversation that we're going to be talking about tonight is different than what you might expect from a normal survivalist-type forum. And I really want to welcome everybody here because this is so different. This is based upon some research that we've been doing recently in our own quest for more survival information. And we came up with this idea about a couple months ago, started to put together with a few people, and it's really come to fruition. We got so much interest. We originally scheduled about 2,200 seats for tonight's broadcast. We have over 4,500 registrants today. So if you're listening to me right now, congratulations. You were one of the half of the people that are going to actually get through tonight. So I hope you feel very lucky with that. I want to throw out some thanks right now to some people that really helped make this come together. I want to thank survivalistboards.com. It's an incredible survival forum. If you are into this information at all, I don't know if there's many forums out there that have the same level of experts that are in that forum or have that great of an information flow that they have between members and a professional format. The people that are on there, a lot of times these forums can kind of degrade into some really kind of people just kind of calling each other names and trying to one-up the other one. This is a very professional forum with people who are really, really dedicated to helping other people prepare as well as learn themselves. I also want to extend my thanks to military.com for going ahead and getting the message out as well to the troops that we have and the vets that we have about this broadcast. Very, very important for them. I think there's a great amount of information that we're going to be going over tonight that is crucial to the soldiers of today, to the modern-day soldiers. So wherever you are, I know we've got some people that are listening in right now from Iraq and Afghanistan, and you might be over in a combat mission somewhere, and I want to say welcome. This is going to be great information, I promise you. Very, very valuable. Now listen, here's the reason why we are covering this topic tonight of escape and evasion. When you look at most preppers, when you look at most survivalists, the things that they're very proficient at are things that are more longer term in the survival equation. So, you know, there are preppers out there that can, you know, they can make a fire just by rubbing their eyelashes together. I mean, they can make their own weapons out of, you know, PVC pipe, and they can, you know, make a bow and arrow out of a toothpick. I mean, they're very, very proficient at extended stay operations, whether it's survive in place, whether it's bugging out, whether it is, you know, being on the run or at home. There's a lot of expertise out there in this area. And frankly, that's not my expertise. That's an area that I'm really diving into now and learning more about. However, what we found was that there wasn't a lot of great information out there or a lot of focus being brought to what happens before you get to a point of safety. What happens before you get to your fortified home where you have your stocked up ammunition, you have your stocked up rations, and you have your stocked up water, and you can just dig in and you could be at home for 6 months or a year, no problem. But what happens if you have to leave the home? What if you happens if you leave and you have to go out and get food and rations? You run out of water, you have to go find food, and you have to go out where other people are. And during times of civil unrest, that's a very, very dangerous thing. But it doesn't just have to happen during like a nuclear holocaust or a pandemic flu outbreak or anything like that. It can happen on the spur of the moment. It can happen anywhere. During the times that we're looking at today, this is a very, very kind of timely topic because look at what happened in Egypt. The demonstrations that happened there not too long ago resulted in the toppling of basically a dictator empire. And that is spreading now. Right now, while at the time that we're talking about this right now, Libya is in turmoil right now, and it looks like that leader is going to go down also. Now, it doesn't just happen overseas. We look at here in the United States, it could be anything. You know, right now in Madison, Wisconsin, there is a demonstration there for union workers. No matter which side of the aisle that you're on, no matter what your political views are, the point is that anytime you get a group of people together, trouble can happen. It can start out peacefully, but all it takes is one little spark to ignite a fire. and then you have a firestorm. And that's what we're talking about tonight. What I'm looking for are tips, strategies, tricks, techniques of how to deal with that initial emergency, that initial crisis, that initial violent outbreak that happens that you could get caught in. Now, this has happened here in the United States before. It's happened in other countries as well. But what we're talking about here are things like the Rodney King riots, where those of you that are that remember that, you know, it eventually what started out as a judgment in a from a jury that people did not like eventually turned into a race riot in one of our largest populated cities. And Reginald Denny was a truck driver who was driving through, was at the wrong place in the wrong time. You'd think that you could drive through the major streets of Los Angeles and not have any problems. However, it wasn't long before he was stopped, dragged out of his truck, and beaten with a brick. We have instances just in, it could be a situation where you're driving along and you would think that you wouldn't be targeted. There's no reason for you to be targeted for something. However, you can be targeted for any reason whatsoever. We had a situation here in Chicago where somebody had pulled off of the car and ran over a little girl by mistake, and the people that were around there attacked the car, dragged the guy out, and beat him to death with a brick. So these are extreme instances where nobody thought they were going to be targeted for any reason whatsoever. You know, you don't know when you're going to come up upon a riot or a demonstration or whether a college demonstration turns into a riot. And it could be an active shooter situation. It could be any one of these situations that causes civil unrest. Now, a lot of times what happens in these is that the military, the police, the people that you would expect to be there for you may not be able to help you out. The police are the people that we normally look to for dealing with civil unrest. They might call in the National Guard. There might be military troops there. However, it's not even with weapons and with riot gear and everything, it's not hard for once that demonstration takes on a life of its own, grabs that momentum, it becomes an unstoppable wave of chaos and violence, and they can quickly overwhelm the police. If you look at situations like Katrina when it happened, a natural disaster can happen anywhere in the United States. In Katrina it happened, and what happened? The police were overwhelmed. They had their own families to take care of as well. Then there were even some cases where the police were out there looting with the looters. The point is this. During times of civil unrest, during times of crisis, that's when you're going to find man is at his best. Okay, you're going to find those stories of people that helped out their neighbor and helped them rebuild and took in a family that was out of their home and gave them shelter in their own while the storm was going on. You're going to find those stories because we want to think that everybody is good-natured. But here's the thing, is that during times of civil unrest and crisis, man is also at his worst. Because during times of desperation and lawlessness, there are those people out there that will take advantage and see it as an opportunity. They'll see it as a chance to get theirs. They'll see it as a chance to take from those who are prepared because they weren't prepared. So you can be the most prepared prepper that you are. You could have a garden in your backyard that would feed you for a year. And then the first night that people get hungry and a crowd comes and just destroys your garden, takes everything you own, you're done. You could be all holed up. You could have a big old sign on the front yard that says, looters will be shot, and somebody's going to find a way in the back door, or five people are going to find their way in the back door. If they don't have anything and they're desperate and they're trying to get, and they realize that you are prepared, they're going to take what's yours in terms of desperation. And even if it's not a desperate crisis, there are those people that will just take advantage of the opportunity of lawlessness, where they don't feel like there's any consequence to their actions, where they are out there and there's a riot that started, and if it's a race riot, what happened with the Rodney King riots, that was essentially a race-related riot. And Denny was doing nothing more than driving through there, and he happened to be the wrong color during a race riot and was pulled out of his truck. You don't know what it's going to be, but you have to be able to deal with it. And I find that this happens to be one of the prepper's biggest blind spots. Those people that are into survival preparedness, urban survival, wilderness survival, whatever it is, the blind spot happens to be, how do I survive that initial chaos? How do I get out of a riot? How do I get out of a demonstration if I find myself in there? If I have to leave the home to go find something, how do I get out of that? That's what we're talking about tonight. But here's the thing. Tonight is different because tonight, you that are listening to me right now, you are the experts. You are the experts, not me. And here's how it works. What I want from you is for you to tell us all your best tips for how to survive civil unrest, how to survive during a riot, how to survive from people that are tracking you. And I'll go over some of the things that we're looking to talk about tonight. But what I want are your best tips. So what I want to do now is I want to start to open up the lines for people to come in. Now, the information that we're looking for this broadcast are tips that you might have about how to break out of a crowd, how to fight off a mass attack. There could be self-defense skills that you'd have to use against a group of people that might be chasing after you, evasive techniques. If somebody is tracking you, let's say, for example, that you were driving and you did run over somebody by mistake and there's like a riot situation or there was a demonstration and you ran into somebody like this, like happened here in Chicago, and instead of waiting around to see if you're going to get bitten by or beaten with a brick, you recognize this is a dangerous situation, people are getting out of hand, and that kind of chaos takes on a life of its own, and then people become animals. So how would you evade them? How would you run away? How would you escape from that type of a situation, either on foot or evasive driving techniques for your auto? Actions that you would use during a riot. What if you're at a demonstration? What if you're in a crowd somewhere and all of a sudden the crowd starts running because of either an active shooter or there's a troublemaker in there and people get in a fight and then all of a sudden it breaks out? How would you get out of it? What equipment would you use for the type of a situation where you're dealing with social chaos? How would you consolidate your family? What are some of the things that you need to do to protect your family during a socially chaotic event? These are all the things that we're looking for. I'm not looking for how to find water during a wilderness survival expo. I'm not looking for information on how to start a fire. I'm not looking for information on what food you need to carry with you when it comes to bugging out. All that information has been more than taken care of out there. What we're looking for is information for escape from a situation and evasion from the situation. Combative skills, tactical skills, evasive drills. Those are the things that we're looking for tonight. So we're going to go ahead and go to the lines right now, and let's go ahead and get started. So the first caller that we have this evening is, it looks like the last four are 3236 on the phone. Hello?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Tip.
Yep.
If you like, you've laid out several different situations, but situations like if you're in a riot thing, blend back in the crowd. Don't call attention to yourself. If they're coming close, maybe, you know, get like you're going to join them right then and gradually back out.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's a great tip also because, you know, I think even in terms of, like, you know, when you think about the military that are, like, in like, Libya right now, so you're on a tank, and all of a sudden everybody right now starts yelling at the leadership of your country, and it's like, there's a decision point there. Like, there happens to be a few hundred thousand people around me right now, and they're all very angry at the people that I work for. Would it be best to, A, tell them all to stop it right now and grow up, or, maybe I should start thinking about yelling out myself? And if you see a lot of these demonstrators now that are standing on top of the tanks and everything, and they're jumping up and down. Well, you don't want to be somebody who's trying, you know, has a rifle telling them to stop it because you can quickly become overwhelmed. So I like your tip, especially from the standpoint of if it looks like it's angry, start joining in to the chorus that whatever they are upset about, then, you know, temporarily at least be upset about it as well, until you can blend in, till they're not looking at you, and then you can make your escape. So I like that. Very, very good. Thank you very much, sir. I'm going to go ahead and mute you back out. And the next caller that we have tonight, looks like the last four are 0485. Hello, you're on the air?
Hello?
Yes. Hello, go ahead.
Yes. This is Robert in Reston, Virginia. My thought on the subject is that if I have to, if I'm in a situation where I have to leave my primary residence, I'm going to, rather than travel the local roads and things like that, I'm going to look for the right-of-ways for the electric transmission lines or the natural gas lines, staying actually within the woods, so that I'm not out in the open.
Can you expand on that a little bit more and let people know why you would take that course of action?
Well, during courses of civil unrest, basically what happened, like down in Katrina, the normal roadways are just packed with people who are trying to leave the area. If you know your area and know where the power transmission lines are, they normally have maintenance pads and things like that for the electricians to be able to get up to the lines. So if you're in a vehicle, you could travel in that direction. But also, they're pretty well maintained and taken care of. Basically, in this area, there are a lot of blueberries and things like that as well. But you really don't want to get stuck in a gridlock situation.
Interesting. So, and let's say that you're near a demonstration or a riot breaks out or something like that. What would I look for to be able? Because that makes a lot of sense to me. If people are going to be on the main roads, they're going to be egressing. They're going to try and either get away from the riot area, or it could be an evacuation attempt or whatever. And you've got to be able to get back home. So let's say that you don't have your vehicle with you. What are some signs that people would look for getting off the main area that these lines are? Are you looking for like a like power lines, a power station at all? Is there any? Are there any
telltale
signs? Okay.
Right. Especially the gas transmission lines are very well marked. They've got yellow plastic markers that just basically say "Don't dig here" because you're going to dig into the gas transmission lines. But of course, all the power transmission, which is overland, have huge towers that you can see for miles. And they're pretty easy to spot. All you need to do is look for where the power comes in and goes out. And of course, if I knew that a riot was going to break out, I wouldn't be there anyway.
Yeah, and that's probably the number one tip that we should probably all just think. If you know ahead of time where that there's something going on, obviously you don't want to put yourself in danger or your family in danger as well. So great point. And great information. I really, really appreciate that, Robert. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Yep.
Those are just like...
Okay. The next caller we have is, and I think the other thing that I think was really important about what Robert said was that it might not even be in a location of where you're headed to for home. It might be in the opposite location where you're at. That would be in the direction to your home or where you're going to survive in place or to your family or to your work or wherever place of safety. So, but it might be a place of initial safety. So you might be going in the wrong direction, but your first priority is to get out of the danger area. So even if you can find these lines, like Robert was saying, if you can find that escape route that's off the main roads and you can get to a place of safety, then you can regroup, you can reorganize, and you can make your way to safety from there with a little bit, without being pressured because you've got zombies on your tail. So, okay, next caller that we have is, I don't think this is Robert yet, 9850. Whoops. There we go.
Hello?
9850. Hello?
Yes.
Here we go.
Always put your carry ammunition in your pants pocket at the end of the day to avoid being without bullets for your firearm. And always use factory-loaded ammunition.
Always use what?
Factory ammunition.
Factory ammunition? Okay. And the reason for, you want to tell everybody, why? What's the reason for using, making sure that you're using factory ammunition? Because we do have a lot of people out there that that do their own reloads and things like that.
If you put too much powder in the bullet, you can cause a explosion in your firearm.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Very good. The next caller we have is, and by the way, everybody, we have about 40 people that are lined up. So just be patient. We're going to get through everybody as much as possible. Some really good good stuff coming out here. The next caller that we have is.
Do you want more juice? Okay. Cyrus can drink your juice. There's plenty.
5291. The Juice Meister.
Yeah, I'm just taking care of my kids. This is Rick from White Lake, Wisconsin. I took a urban escape and evasion class, which is pretty much what you're going into.
Yeah.
One of the key things I remember is look at what everybody's wearing and try to dress like the average person so you blend in and don't look like an outsider. And the reason for that is, you know, in a riot, they're going to look for people on the outside, you know, that are not part of the group. So if you blend right in, you can kind of disappear in plain sight. You don't stand out.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, definitely the more you stand out, the more of a target you're going to be. And that comes into play in a lot of different ways as well, not just the way that you dress, but also in the way that you talk. I mean, there's a lot of different ways. What are some other ways that, because it sounds like you went to a really high-speed course there. What were some other things that they offered as far as tips for being able to blend in or hide in plain sight?
Well, it's one of those things, after doing the class, I'm in a habit of, you look around the city, like, I do this in your hometown, or where you're at, in Chicago, and I live out in the sticks in Wisconsin, and just being there for a day, I noticed two people only the whole time in the Lincoln Square area wearing camouflage, and they stood out.
Mm.
And most survivalists I have a ton of camouflage. Where I live, nobody blinks an eye, but in the city, like I said, I noticed two people the entire day running around wearing camouflage. So you just kind of try to figure out what the average person in the area wears. If it's jeans and a leather jacket, and that's what most people wear, or whatever. The term they use was called baseline. So if you look like everybody else, and I'm glad you mentioned you talk like everybody else, because if you're from like the Midwest and you're in Texas, you're going to sound out of place, possibly.
Yeah, and I moved to Texas, so I immediately stand out. There's no, like, you can see me coming a mile away. You can hear me coming a mile away. That's a great point. And the other thing is that, you know, even if you're not necessarily dressed right then and there like the local population or look like the local population, can you grab any clothes? Is there anything that you can take to be able to blend in as soon as possible so that you don't stand out?
Well, most people carry, you're not going to look out of place with a backpack or something if you got a change of clothes in there. That's another thing that we went into is if you got a simple change of clothes in a bag to if, you know, if they're, like you mentioned tracking, if they're looking for you wearing jeans and a T-shirt and you duck into an alley, bathroom, whatever, throw on a pair of sweats and a windbreaker and a hat, and you look completely different. They're looking for somebody with your clothes. And something Tom Brown mentions in the movie The Hunted, if you're being tracked, he says just duck down a few inches because people look for you at your height. So if you change your height a little bit just by walking with a stoop, you kind of disappear in a crowd.
Good point. Good stuff. Thank you so much from Wisconsin. Appreciate that, man. Okay. The next one we have is, last for our 1192. Hello, you're on the air?
Yes, it's Bob in Detroit.
Hey, Bob.
One of the things I've seen, I worked in New York City for many years, and now I'm working in Detroit. People working in high-rise buildings, they're constantly going up and down floors. Women especially, men also do it. They don't carry their keys, wallets, or stuff when they go from, say, the seventh floor down to the basement to the, and there's a fire alarm, emergency happens. They got to get out of the building. They're forced out of the buildings. This happened in Detroit where I was working. People couldn't get to their cars to the next day that they could get back in the building. Always carry enough that you can leave the scene of an emergency with you when you're in a building.
That is a great point. I've never thought of that before.
I never saw that in place on any of the sites, and I thought about it, and I always do that. I go down to another floor, I carry keys, my wallet, stuff like that with me.
Wow, that's a really great tip, Bob. I really appreciate that. A really, really good tip. Thanks.
Okay. Have a good one.
And everybody, if you come up with a second one or you have more, feel free to call in. It will take a little, we're getting through here pretty good. We've got 43 people that are lined up right now. So just bear with me. It looks like we're going through this. But there's some great stuff out here. And this is the whole reason for this entire event was because, you know, most people are calling into an event to learn from other people or, you know, to call in to listen to a guru talk about how to build a fire with nothing but, you know, your bare hands and a chocolate bar. Well, what we realized a long time ago was that we came to the devout people who are really, really into survivalism, whether it's firearms, things like that, that there's such a wealth of information out there and things that we haven't thought of that we wanted to tap into that for everybody's sake. That was the whole reason for forums in the first place, was for people to ask questions, to be able to get answers, and for people to share information. So I really appreciate everybody calling tonight. We've got a lot of great people that are giving some really, really good information, really good information here, and really appreciate it. The next caller that we have is the last four is 5442. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Sean in Sacramento.
Hey, Sean, welcome.
Thank you very much. This is great. I think for me, one tip is to avoid the impulse to check things out because, you know, I see. Yeah, there's a temptation when I think people see a crowd or hear a lot of noise to try to find out what's going on over there. And I think when you have a riot or something, there's an edge to it. You know, there, you can see the signs of it before you get up on it. Is there smoke in the air? Do you hear the noise? You know, I work several blocks from the state capitol, and when there's something going on at the capitol, I can hear it. So, you know, when you hear that noise, whether it's the event happening right there or maybe you have to leave your retreat and go look for something, you know, watch for that edge. Are you in your car? Do you see people carrying a lot of things like they may be looting and carrying stuff back? Turn around and get out of the way. Don't check it out. Avoid.
Well, that's a great point. It works the other way, too, because let's say that, you know, you need to get into a building. When you smash open a window and you call that attention to yourself, people are going to naturally, as being as curious as they are, you know, people, let's face it, when there's an accident on the side of the road, who doesn't rubberneck to see what's actually going on over there? So you can call attention to yourself when you're doing something. So the least amount of noise that you make, or least amount of, signature that you have in an area that is ripe for civil unrest, the less attention you're going to call to yourself. All this really kind of combines in together with a lot of stuff we're talking about with blending in and not calling attention to yourself. And good stuff. Sean, great, great point. I really, really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, the next caller that we have is, the last four is 4590. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, this is James from Centerville. I guess, you know, they've talked about a lot of different things, but essentially, you're looking, you want to try and blend in the crowd visually, change if you need to, and verbally keep quiet if you can't verbally join in, and just stay quiet and calmly, discreetly remove yourself from the area, threat area. Once you're free from that threat area, or if you're initially outside of that threat area, find what you can that you need, whether it be water, food, clothing, and get yourself away from there. Eventually, you want to get to your bug out bag and hit the road. And that's keep your head about you. The best thing you can have with you is your survival instinct. in your awareness around you. It's the best advice I could give anybody. And other than if you don't have a concealed carry permit, get one. It gives you the right to carry a concealed, any legally owned weapon on your person or in your vehicle. It doesn't only apply to guns. So be prepared.
Yeah.
Know how to physically, you know.
Yeah. So
essentially, if you're in it, get out of it. If you're not in it, get away from it.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, and also, you know, just in blending in, again, we come back to that. And the thing is that for the most part, if there's a focus of the demonstration, if there's a focus of the riot, and it's not just complete pandemonium, if it's somebody that's yelling at a speaker or something like that, then the focus is off of you. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, the focus is on them, so it's easier to kind of blend in when there's something else to focus people on. Now, that calls in here, and I'm wondering if anybody has any information. So, once again, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and mute you back out, but a really good point. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Thank you.
Yep. And, okay. So I wonder if anybody has any information also about what if you don't have a focus of the attention there? What if it isn't focused on a speaker or isn't focused on an altercation between people or focused on the police or whatever, if there isn't something centrally focusing there and you need something to help provide a distraction, how would you provide a distraction? What are some things that you can do to be able to give yourself that little bit of a moment that you might need to be able to get out there? So I'll pose that challenge out there for anybody that wants to jump in and offer any information on how do you create that space if it's not given to you. In the meantime, while you're thinking of that, I'll go on to the next caller, and it is the last four are 0357. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Rick in Colorado Springs.
Hello, Rick.
My tip is if you are caught in a crowd that's moving and you're in the middle of it, and I would suggest you not try to cut across at 90 degrees or go backwards against the flow, but go with the flow as best you can and work your way to the edge. Just like you're in a river and trying to get out, go with it as best you can, get out as soon as you can and as safely as you can, and find a way out of the crowd down an alley, down a side street, without causing any additional attention to yourself as much as possible anyway. And that was it.
Yeah, the first thing that came up, so thank you very much. I appreciate that, Rick. I'm going to go ahead and mute you back out here. And go ahead. There we go. That was the first thing that came to mind as you were talking about that. I was thinking, well, you know, it sounds just like a river. If you're in a fast-flowing stream and you need to get to the bank before you go over the waterfall, you're obviously not going to try and go sideways. You're not going to go paddle back upstream, but to try and go at an angle maybe so you can get to the edge of it before you go over. So really, really great advice. Good stuff. Okay, the next caller is, last four is 7030. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Paul from Arizona. How you doing?
Welcome, Paul. Thank you very much.
You know, the thought that I had was actually based on a couple of that have been expressed already on the escape and evade. And I always carry a cheap, inexpensive, like a wig and a ball cap in my car. And usually I throw it in my backpack when I'm running around the street or so. And usually I have like a windbreaker in there. So if I am, somebody identifies me and I become a target, then I try to get out of the way, either duck into an alley or down a side street, and then I'll just put that windbreaker on really quick and throw the cap on and the wig, and try to, you know, disappear in the sense that I'm not that person you were looking for, kind of thing. So it's just one of the thoughts that I had.
Yeah, no, that's a good one, and it's also things that don't require a lot of space either and are very lightweight.
Very lightweight, compact, and you can just stuff it in the bottom or into a pouch, and, you know, it makes it easy.
Yeah. That was Paul, right?
Yes.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much. Appreciate you calling in tonight.
Okay.
Okay, the next caller we have, looks like the last four, is 9101. Hello, you're on the air. Last four.
Hey, how you doing?
There you go. Hey.
Yeah, this is Jeff from somewhere in Florida.
Hey, Jeff.
And my tips come mostly from my experience during Andrew. First off, laws permitting, like was said earlier, always be armed, especially before the weather hits, when you're searching out resources. Try and leave your vehicle, you know, a good distance away from the point where you're going. A good example was trying to acquire supplies at a Home Depot, which was just chaos and mobbed. And, you know, we didn't want to be anywhere near the place because if you'd been within probably 15 to 20 square blocks, you were just screwed. You would have never got out of there. Once you ID there's no supplies available, you're going to think outside the box. And so we ended up scavenging our supplies from a construction site that wouldn't be needing them. Somebody else mentioned packed roadways, another good point. They'll be packed. It takes 4 to 6 hours to get from Key West to North Miami. The evacuation for Andrew, that trip took 18 hours. That's 18 hours.
Wow.
So in Florida, there's no off-roading by the power lines, like somebody mentioned. You can do that up north. Down here, you need a boat for that, so that's out for here. And Sean said it, don't check things out. You know, when a Category 5 storm goes by, it sounds like a freight train. And then when the eye comes over, it's beautiful. And, you know, you're drawn, people want to go out and see it. But there's still freight train left. And then, of course, afterwards, it's usually just absolute destruction. So, you know, don't go out unless you have to.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, good points. I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for calling in. Let's see. The next one, next caller is, it's 2226. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is John in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. I've got a couple things. If you want distractions, your car probably has car flares in it. You can set those off. Someone mentioned if they're in a high-rise building, I always carry an LED flashlight, whether it's on a key ring or on my belt. But you're in buildings, you want to have light. One caller mentioned always be armed. Sometimes you're in a building that doesn't allow you to carry a weapon. And I found something that's really great. It's made by Kimber, and it's a pepper spray. They call it the Guardian. My wife made an ankle holster for me, and it allows me to go through anywhere with something that's actually better than just your hands and of course, is not a weapon. And then if you've got someone chasing you, you could consider having caltrops or tires spiked in your car. You can make those out of chicken wire, or you can weld nails together. Those are my recommendations.
I like that. How do you do that with chicken wire?
If you find the intersection of where two wires come together, go out about an inch or two, cut with wire cutters, bend two in one direction, two in the other direction, then cut the ends off at an angle, and it'll stick straight up.
Great. Good information. He gave us a whole a treasure trove there. I appreciate you calling and giving us a tip. Okay, the next caller. We're getting some good stuff in tonight, really, really good stuff. And one thing I want to point out here, the previous caller, and I'm sorry, I just totally spaced on your name, calling in from somewhere in Florida, was talking about how chaotic Home Depot was right before Andrew. And it's not just the 15 blocks around Home Depot, but think about when you get there. Think about when you get to the grocery store and the people that haven't prepared, like many of you are, when that last box of Fruit Loops is gone. And you have it in your hands, and somebody's saying, "Hey, that's the last one. I need it. Your cart's big. You know, your cart is more full than mine. My kids need. I got five kids waiting at home. I need those Fruit Loops." Think about the chaos that can ensue just at something like a Home Depot or at a grocery store when people are preparing. Think about the social unrest that can happen there. If you want a good idea of this, look at sometimes when you're looking at sometimes in developing nations where there is food being given out and there's not a lot to be given out, maybe because the initial supplies have been stolen by a warlord or supplies weren't able to get through because of a crisis. Look at Haiti when they were giving out food. When people are at the back of the truck, it's not like people are just lining up politely and holding out their hands and they'll thank you so much for the rice. People know that there's not enough to go around, and they're going to get theirs. When you're hungry, when you have a family to defend and protect and keep safe, aren't you going to do the same thing? I mean, we all want to think that we would do, you know, maybe be in the best frame of mind, would help out our neighbor, but ultimately it comes down to it. If your child is dying of starvation or dehydration, are you really going to accept, no, I'm not going to give up anything because my family has it? You're going to do what you need to protect yourself and your family. Well, the same thing is going to go in any type of these situations. If people, and it doesn't even have to be the natural disaster has even shown up yet or anything. It could just be people's paranoia of what's going to happen. I mean, wait until, remember when the millennium was turning around. So the year 2000, the chaos that ensued there. Okay, people were paranoid about what was going to happen at midnight. Well, the same thing for 2012 is coming up. You know, apparently we're all going to, the Earth's going to turn inside out. We're all going to melt. And so saith the, you know, those people down south. So it's going to, you know, it can just be the paranoia of what might happen. And the last thing I'll say is if you want to look at civil chaos in action, go ahead and get on YouTube and just type in the words Black Friday. Type in the words Black Friday, the day after Christmas, I mean the day after Thanksgiving, the first day when stores open up their doors at like 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning for people to come in and get a sale, and there's only going to be 100 DVDs given out for $5. And the pandemonium that ensues of people trampling over one another to be able to get to a DVD player. And they don't care that they're stepping on anybody. Go ahead and pull up on YouTube. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, the next caller that we have here is, last four is 1798. Go ahead, you're on the air. Last four is 1798. Okay, we'll go ahead and take the person out. I'm sorry. Just listen for the last four that you have there. I'll try one last time later, but we're going to go to the next caller in line, which is 0680. Number 0680. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, you know, you're talking about riot situations. You know, okay, you're not necessarily downtown in the crowd. It spills over to your neighborhoods. What would be your best way to avoid being attracted? My advice would be to try to keep as low profile as possible. You know, not attract any attention to your position. You know, you don't want a bunch of, you know, gangbangers showing up at your doorstep, you know, because they see you in your house, you know, and you're not of the right color that they are. You know, you really don't want to be out in public with that type of situation going on. And I noticed one of your guys, I think he was in West Virginia, had mentioned if you have to get out of town by using the power lines. Okay, you also have, like he said, you know, the power lines, but down here in Texas we also have pipelines. And a good off-road vehicle, on foot, horseback, whatever, these will lead you across country away from the disturbances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm moving down to Texas, so thanks so much, because I'm going to need to know that. Any Texans that have other survival information for me, just call on in. Appreciate that. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Okay, and actually it brings up a really good, I think this is a good question to throw out there as well, because we talked about keeping a low profile, but are there times where you would want to keep a high profile? There were times during the Rodney King riots and Katrina where people literally put out signs. They would patrol in front of their house with a rifle. They would put up signs saying looters will be shot. If it's in a situation where maybe the chaos is coming to your neighborhood, do you make sure that people know that you're home where you might be a target? Now, if people do know that you're home, you might become a target, okay? So if they see that there's a car in the driveway and they're looking for, you know, if there's bloodlust, then you've just made yourself a target. However, it could also be that if it looks like you're not home, then your home is a target for looters. And if they think that you're not home, then maybe they plan on breaking in because you're not home. So this brings up a really kind of interesting question here. Which is better? Should you make sure that people know that you're not an easy target, or should you just kind of lay low and pretend that you're not there? So so there's a question I'll throw out to you, too. Okay, so the next caller here, we're going to try it one more time to number 1798. The last four of the phone number is 1798. Are you there? Hello? Okay, it looks like you walked away from the phone. I'm really...
Is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, you caught it.
This is the second...
You got me.
The last fraction of a second.
Sorry, it's Greg in Roanoke there.
Welcome, Greg.
Mine's not so much... I've got an issue with... If I get in these situations and I'm armed, my moral dilemma and ethical dilemma is always, can I actually kill somebody to defend myself? And the things I've done to prepare for that, military does some of these things too. I picked up hunting again, and I go deer hunting and bear hunting, and in that I have to kill an animal. I make sure that I clean it, and I process it myself and butcher it, and going through that, it kind of desensitizes you to some of those things. First-person shooter games, playing those. The things you pick up from playing a first-person shooter game and things the military plays these all the time, too, looking for things, looking for where people would be hiding, looking for stuff like that. You know, first-person shooter is another thing that I use or do. And then the last thing to prepare myself has been getting into IDPA and actually using my pistol in defensive situations that they come up with an IDPA and actually doing practice on that and stuff and going through scenarios and stuff. But that's been my biggest dilemma is figuring out, can I actually defend myself and you know, pull the trigger when it comes down to it. So that's
What's your name?
It's Greg.
Greg, okay. Greg, I'm going to go ahead and mute you out. Thank you. And I want to really thank Greg for bringing that up. Because I think, in fact, I know. This is a real challenge for people that I think they don't even realize that they have. For those of you, I didn't really do much of an introduction. A lot of you know me because you're members of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants. But I was 10 years in the military. I was in the Army. I was light infantry in combat. And I'll tell you, no matter, even with the training that you get in the military, and I'm sure pretty much all of the fellow soldiers that I have that have gone over into combat can also say that despite all the training, despite sending all the rounds downrange, and I don't care if you're a civilian or military, you can be a quickest draw you can with your Glock. It doesn't matter. When it comes time to actually pull the trigger on somebody, even when it's the enemy, especially those first rounds that you're sending downrange, is a lot harder than what you might think. It's not easy to kill a human being. We're programmed actually not to kill a human being. And so it's a very, very difficult thing. It's easy to say, yeah, I would blow that person away. Anybody ever comes near me, I'm going to pull that trigger. Yet you can see actual footage of law enforcement that had their gun trained on somebody, telling the person to stop coming toward them. The person kept coming toward them, had a weapon with them, and the police officer could not pull the trigger. And there were times where officers have the gun taken away from them and used on them, because the bad guys oftentimes are much more adept at actually killing somebody, shooting somebody, creating violence. It's something that they are already conditioned for, whereas practicing for it and actually doing it are completely different things. And I want to thank you for bringing that tip up, because that is something that I did as well to condition myself, realizing that this was before I was in combat, but should I ever be in combat in order to do it, I'm not a hunter by trade. I'm not a big hunter, and for some reason fishing doesn't have the same effect. But, you know, I did go hunting to be able to condition myself, to be able to at least know that I'm taking a life. And even if it is a deer, it is taking a life, and there is a certain conditioning that you get out of that. So that was a really great great tip that I think not a lot of people really think about. So thanks so much for that. Really, really good stuff. We're almost at the point where we're going to be giving away one of these bags here, so I really appreciate everybody calling in. What we've got right now is the last four is 8159. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
Can I give a few things if I'm quick?
Yeah, sure.
All right, one thing is you can absolutely train your awareness. So if you're out, like, say, you're shopping or something like that, you know, if you decide you want to look for every red shirt there, that really picks up on your perception. And a lot of survival is just being aware of your surroundings. You take that extra second before you look and walk outside, you know, make sure there's nobody outside the door in bad situations. You can train your awareness. I've had a lot of martial arts training, and the one time I had to get in a fight in a bar, I mean, it all went to hell in a handbasket. You only have really basic fighting skills in the beginning. You know, you cover your head, and, you know, you decide where you want to hit somebody. All the fancy moves and all the stuff you know, really falls out the window when you think you're in trouble. And I think those are really important things. You got to know, before you ever have an altercation, what you're prepared to do. You can't be thinking about it when trouble happens. You've got to know ahead of time that, okay, if my life's in danger, if my family's in danger, I am absolutely prepared to do whatever I have to do to protect myself and my family. So, I mean, you could prepare for your awareness. You take that extra time you need to, you know, look out the door. Make sure there's nobody outside the door in a bad situation. Or, you know, you're getting in your car. Make sure there's nobody in the back seat. It's learning to take that extra time of awareness to make sure nothing bad happens. And in a survival situation, the first thing that kills you is your core body temperature, statistically. So if you ever have to survive, you want to make sure that you're not too hot in the summertime and you're not too cold in the wintertime, because those are the first things that will kill you. Before, you know, the next would be getting enough water, and then after that would be getting enough food. So it's just all forethought. You can train your awareness, and that you got to be prepared to know inside your head what you're going to do when something bad happens. Because when it's too late, you know that it's wrong to hurt somebody and those other things really come into play. And even if you do something wrong in a fight, it gives you that time you need to do something right. So if you don't do the perfect strike, or, you know, you don't remember your kata, but all the other stuff they teach you in martial art, even if you do something like push a guy or anything, you know, okay, you don't get him in the eye, you get him in the face. But if that gives you that fraction of a second to do the next move, you keep moving forward, those are important things. I mean, there's no hesitation. You keep going forward, and that's what you really need to survive.
Good points, really good points. In fact, I want to expand on these a little bit more. So thank you for calling in. Very, very good stuff. And there's a couple of things that I want to just point out very, very quickly about what the caller said, and that is, number one, you can really, you know, awareness is so much a part of it. And I think we started to talk a little bit more. There was one other caller that was talking about that survival mindset, extremely important. But with the awareness also, one of the things you can talk about, I mean, that was a great tip. If you go into a store and you're looking for all the red shirts, then you can train your awareness there. You can do the same thing by doing it throughout the day. So at the beginning of the day, and this is a trick that we use in martial arts and in combatives training to increase your awareness, is before you leave for the day, say, today I'm on the lookout for red shirts. So it might be when you go into a store, you're looking for red shirts. You go into work. I don't know who's wearing red shirts at work, but there could be somebody wearing red shirts at work. You're out on you're driving to work, you're looking in the cars next to you. Do you see red shirts? So you try to, you know, pick out however many red shirts you can, but it trains your awareness to happen throughout the day, and then the next day you pick something else. It's a really, really great tool. The other thing he brings up is, and there are a lot of people I know that are on tonight that are really into self-defense, combatives, martial arts. And the thing is that so few people that I talk to that are preppers really take into account the necessity for being able to use your hands as weapons, not just as tools. And a lot of people rely so much on firearms, which I love firearms. Love them to death. And, you know, I'm big into firearms. However, you never know when you're not going to be able to get to your firearm. You never know when your firearm is not going to be functional. You never know when you're not going to have access to it, and you're going to have to get to it. You could be surprised. You could be jumped. You could be too close to somebody, and they get the drop on you. So you've got to be able to use your hands and feet as weapons and improvised weapons so that you can get to your firearm if you have one, or just at the very basic, you have to be able to protect yourself. So I think everybody should take some form of martial art or self-defense, something that's more reality-based helps, obviously, and it doesn't even have to be going to local classes. I know a lot of people are really burdened with time. It can be something that you can do literally via video. So it's better than nothing, and I highly recommend everybody do it. The next caller we have is 9110, and I know you've been on this phone, I think it looks like, from what I have here, probably longer than anybody else. Now, there's a few people here that are on for a long more. And by the way, everybody, there's now 56 people in the queue here. I will get to you as soon. I'm trying to get through everybody here. I guess if I can just shut up, then we'd be all good to go, right? So the last four is 9110. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, so I think you actually just covered the points that I had primarily to mention. One is physical preparedness. Make sure that you are in a condition to get yourself out of any trouble. The second one is, of course, mental preparedness. You know, stay away from the trouble areas. Stay away from where you see people getting into altercations, or if you see people following you, you duck into a store or even into a crowd, for that matter, to get away from them. But if you keep both of those things together, I think you should be in good shape. And, of course, all the other ideas work great as well about the wig or the cap or the jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of good stuff tonight. I'm sorry if I stole your thunder.
No worries.
If I start talking, I can't stop. You can just ask my wife. And besides, I've got too much caffeine in me right now anyway. So.
No, all great points so far. Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, thanks so much for calling in. Okay, the next caller, it says unavailable, so I don't have your phone number, but what I'll say is if you have an unlisted phone number, call out your first name right now, and I'll tell you who is actually on the line right now. Just call out your first name. If you have your hand raised right now, just call out your first name. Okay, the person that I've unmuted is not calling out his or her first name. So one last call. Just go ahead and call out your first name. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to take down your hand now. Then you didn't speak up, so I've got to be able to let the next caller come on. I'm sorry about that. If your phone number is unlisted, it shows up as unavailable here. So we kind of have to get kind of creative with being able to allow you to jump on the phone here. So the next caller is 9172. 9172, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Sean of Fremont, Nebraska.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, if I got just a second, I've got three quick points on some previous things I've heard before I get to my main tip.
Okay.
First off, I don't ever recommend anyone ever carrying a weapon unless they're already mentally prepared to use it, because otherwise you're just bringing a weapon that the other person is going to use.
That's a good point. Very good point.
The next thing, you know, like in a crowd, you know, it's escape and evasion, but sometimes you can't escape. So evade by hiding in places that you would be repelled by, like around garbage, around sewage. Things that other people are going to stay away from, at least until the crowd passes by or whatever, until you can get out of the area. And then the last thing is, on the right-of-ways, like the power lines, the other big thing, which are all over the country, are train tracks. And they're kept clear of weeds and everything, so they're very easy to walk. And they will always take you to a city. So, and that brings me to my main point. The one thing I always recommend that I never read anywhere is always have a very good set of boots for everybody in the family that are already broken in, as well as a first aid kit for feet. You know, have moleskins, bandages, that kind of thing, plus three or four heavy pairs of socks for everybody. Because one thing in that kind of a situation, you may have a vehicle for a while, but you're going to start be doing a lot more walking than you've ever done in your life. And you need a good set of boots to get you by it. Because if everyone's got, you know, blisters and everything else after 2 or 3 days, all they're going to do is slow you down until you can get to where you are at your home base or whatever.
Yeah, good points. And things that work for us in the military, we're wearing a pair of either pantyhose or dress socks underneath a regular pair of socks. And then moleskin is your best friend. But and then also, like you said, wearing some worn in, you know, some boots that are already worn in, and you're not dealing with the new boot syndrome. Really, really good stuff. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you calling in.
Yep.
Okay, next caller is also an unlisted number. It's also unavailable. So I'm going to go ahead and you may have called out your name before. I'm going to ask you to call out again. So if you have your hand raised right now, go ahead and you just cleared your throat, actually.
Oh, is that me, Michael?
That's you, Michael.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, man.
I'm from Detroit, and TFT brought me on the call.
Awesome.
I don't have anything specific to add, but I do have an incredibly valuable tip for everyone, and that is to read the book called The Urban Warrior's Bible. It's an excellent resource on self-protection and urban survival, and I haven't seen anything else like it. And it basically covers exactly what this call is all about, so I highly recommend you guys check it out. And you can just basically do a Google search on it, Urban Warrior's Bible, and it'll show up as the first link. Also, here's something from Earl Nightingale, The Strangest Secret. You become or get what you think about most of the time. So be aware and be prepared, but don't let all the crazy things that could happen get you in a state of fear, because if you're always focusing on bad things that could happen, you're asking for trouble, literally.
Yeah, good stuff. And that, you know, that, I don't think we've touched enough on survival mindset and just how important of a role your mind plays in your ability to survive and get out of danger as well as sustain yourself. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Good stuff, man. I really appreciate it. Yep. Okay, the next caller is, last four is 3568. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity to talk tonight.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one answer that's going to fit every scenario. You know, each situation is going to be unique to where you are itself. The home preparation is going to be quite differently than if you're, say, on vacation. There you may have to prepare on the fly. Most important, I think, and we've kind of touched on this, is a mental code of awareness. You always have to have that, be aware of what's going on. Excuse me, with your surroundings, but always have an escape route planned wherever you are, whenever you are. I was on vacation once, and there was, I thought, a soccer game going on. Well, it turned out to be a march, and the march was starting to get out of hand, and people started throwing rocks. Sure enough, they started coming into the hotel where we were. Well, I didn't have to be told to leave. I knew the way out was through a servant's entryway, which led out to another block. So you've always got to be prepared to have an escape route. You got to have the skills and the mindset, too. Get the training, physical training. Is it one person? Is it two or three or four persons? You know, if it ever actually hits the fan, you're going to have to be mentally and physically prepared. If you're at home, know your neighbors. Prep and work with them. And work together to protect your home area if you have to do that. That's all I really need to add at this point. We've covered a lot of stuff already, but I'd just like to add that.
Yeah, great stuff. Really appreciate you calling in. Thanks so much for those tips. Okay, next caller we have on is the last four. Now, if there are any military out here, I mean, military, the role of military has changed so much these days. I mean, now, where it used to be, you know, when I was in, it was basically wilderness warfare. We were fighting the Spetsnaz, and it was mechanized. And now it's become more domestic disturbance, not domestic disturbance, but like, you know, civil unrest, police work, and door-to-door type fighting. It's more urban terrain now as well. And so I'm wondering if there are any military that are on, because I know military.com did a great blast for us out to everybody today as well. I want to thank them again for that. And if there's any military that are listening right now, any training that you've received for escape and evasion in urban terrain, or maybe you went to SEER school or something, if there's any advice that you can offer, it would be really, really appreciated as well. So just go ahead and jump on. If you're on the phones, all you have to do is press star 2 on your handset, and you'll be able to join us by phone. So please go ahead and do that now. Okay, the next caller is, last four is 1531. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, it's Dustin, Diane in Dallas. I'll make it quick. One thing is you can always be armed with a heavy walking stick, or a light one, even for that matter. Never really thought about that until I became disabled. You know, so I'm never unarmed. I mean, I'm never unarmed anyway. But second of all is, yeah, if you don't have any unarmed combative skill, just remember that whatever firearm or weapon you may have, you will probably at some point in time in bad scenarios, you know, need some combative training to either get to it or hang on to it. And I used to help one of my instructors teach weapon retention and found out how important that was. Back as a young man, I used to try to do some high-end security, and, you know, one of the things, I thought we were going to have an opportunity to go out of the country, and that never materialized. But what the old hands were telling me in the process of making sure I wasn't entirely too wet behind the ears is that most of the people that are involved in riots are not the type of people that you would invite for Sunday dinner. And to that, you know, this was not planned. Nobody organized this. Nobody said, hey, we're having a riot tomorrow at 3 o'clock, be there. So at some point in time, there's going to be a lull. These people are going to wind down. They're going to either be under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or if not, they're probably going to need to secure some. You know, if it's a really bad situation, if you can just kind of lay low, or if, you know, this was in the context of having to get a team out, you know, get the principals out, is that, you know, at some point in time, there's going to be a window when people have to go to sleep, you know, do whatever, and be ready for that lull, because it may not be a very long one. So, you know, you may have to hunker down until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, but be ready to hit it at that time, because by an hour, 30 minutes, an hour after sunrise, it may be wound up again. So,
yeah. Very good points. Excellent points. Thanks so much, Justin. Appreciate you calling in.
Okay. Welcome to Texas. We'll be happy to have you.
Yeah. Thanks, man. All right. Okay. The next caller is, looks like the last four. I appreciate everybody's patience. I know everybody's been on here for a long, long time. I really appreciate it. The last four here is 1290. Go ahead.
Okay. My name's Amanda from British Columbia.
Hey, Amanda.
So my point is, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about firearms, guns, pistols. Eventually, those are going to run out of bullets, get waterlogged, jammed. Blades do not do that.
Hmm. Absolutely true. And in Canada, you don't have the same kind of laws that we do here that are a little bit more liberal when it comes to firearms, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's
likely you can carry a pocket knife with you. It's not the best. But you ask any cop, they'll still draw their pistol if you've got a knife out at them.
Yeah, good point. Excellent. All right, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. I'm glad that we have some women on time. It looks like it's been the boys club tonight, and it's good to finally get a woman on here as well. I know there's I heard a woman on that was 81 years old, and I'm wondering, I'd like to hear from you as well if you're on here at all. So welcome everybody here. And she brings up a good point. We brought up a lot of weapons tonight, and I'm curious what other weapons somebody might think about to carry on themselves in this type of a situation. We've talked about carrying a walking stick. We've talked about knives. We've talked about firearms. We've talked about pepper spray. We even did, with the ISCQC, the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, we did a whole broadcast one time on self-defense with a cane. Did you realize that the one weapon that you can carry legally onto a plane that you can do a lot of damage with is a cane. I don't know if I think I just might have screwed up. You can carry onto a plane. I'm not sure if I said that correctly, but you know, you can carry a cane onto the plane, and it's a very effective weapon. There are even DVDs out there and martial arts systems that incorporate a cane that you can learn how to use it. But it can be very, very effective in the right hands. So good stuff. The next caller that we have, that is, let's see. Looks like the last four is 4366. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Bud from Western Oregon.
Hey, Bud.
Hey there. First, let me thank you for this endeavor. It's living in a non-urban area. There's a lot of those things we don't think about, and certainly we travel to those places occasionally. Frankly, not anymore than I have to. I'd like to reinforce a couple of things that people have talked about already, and somebody just very briefly addressed my main point. But if I can, I'd like to reinforce the preparedness thing. And if not too many years ago, there was a brownout blackout in Southern California. And it wasn't long before there was not a battery to be found anywhere. There was a major run on flashlight batteries, all kinds of batteries. So people down there weren't very well prepared for that. Our chief issue here on the coast of Oregon is not social chaos. It's tsunamis. And, of course, they can wreak as much havoc very quickly with very little warning sometimes. So preparedness here is an issue. And in light of that, one of the things that I practice is keeping my fuel tank no less than half full. And that hasn't been mentioned today at all. These are things that are aside from what I really want to talk about. Also, you mentioned Tim Larkin early on, and he's had an association with Dr. Ignatius, I think, of Frontline. Frontsight.
Yeah.
Frontsight. And one of the things I got out of reading Frontsight's, staying tuned in Frontsight, is a color code of mental awareness presentation. And I would suggest that anybody that's been talking about or interested in or needs a little reinforcement on their situational awareness can Google that Frontsight website, and somewhere in there they'll find the color code of mental awareness, and that was a real eye-opener. And I want to get to my point now, finally. The protection, not necessarily the escape, but your protection in place. And I recently helped form a neighborhood watch group. It's a kind of a strength in numbers sort of feeling. I've lived in this particular location for about 16 years, and there were people lived very close to me that I never met in all that time. So if people are going to turn on each other, it would seem to me that you're much less likely to turn on somebody that you've either played canasta with or had a barbecue with or at least shaken hands with and sat down at a preparedness meeting. I think you'd be much more likely to join forces with them, so to speak, and and help each other out. By the same token, I might mention that I've also become aware of people in my proximity who I would be cautious about. Am I making my point there?
Yes, you have. Good point. And actually, you bring up a couple of things, actually, because when people are looking for putting together some sort of a network that they have, you've already brought up actually one good tip, and then I think another one that I want to kind of expand on a little bit. So I want to thank you very much for calling in, Bud, right?
Bud, yeah, okay. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for calling in. And Bud brings up a really good point, because a lot of people, you know, if you start talking about preparedness, you're talking about urban survival and things like that, I mean, let's face it, in most communities, at least where I live now, people are going to kind of look at you kind of funny. So where do you find people that are of the same mindset that you are? I mean, do you just stick up a brochure or a flyer down at the local Piggly Wiggly? What you got to do is look and see where are those people already congregating. So put up a brought up a great, really great point, is maybe even just a neighborhood watch association. Those are people that are already thinking in terms of watching out for other people and being prepared. So that could be a good seed for it. A lot of communities also, if you go to the local fire department, there are a lot of CERT programs, C-E-R-T. So these are response-type organizations of citizens there for types of different crises that happen. The other thing is it could have a local search and rescue team. Again, a lot of the like minds go to these types of things. A lot of people that are into survival and just being prepared. It's a great opportunity to meet up with people that are thinking along the same lines you are. Okay, it is. We've been going now for almost an hour and a half. Of course, me blabbering on was about an hour of that. So what I want to do now is I want to give away our first scram bag. Now, the scram bag is our version of kind of a middle phase of social chaos. So it's not meant for long-term exposure to the elements, long-term bug-out, things like that. It's meant for something that you would normally carry close to your person. It might be in the trunk of your car, something that, if you can get to it, offers you the luxury of some other tools that may be able to help you get out of a situation. Now, we actually have a new program that's coming out, the Social Chaos Survival Guide, where we outline different equipment that you would use in the situation of social chaos. Those are the scram bag, which is more of your luxury type items, and also your scare kit. Your scare kit is your social chaos active response kit. Okay? So this is the thing that you're going to use for immediate action whenever you're in trouble. But I'm looking at the bag right now. It is a black bag because you don't want to stand out. So if you are picking a bag for your own bug-out bag or a scram bag, then you're not going to want something that's bright orange, because it is going to get people's eyes and it's going to draw attention to you. Inside this bag right now, we have everything from protective gear for toxic dust, for protecting yourself in case of like an explosion, things like that, gas that's in the area. There are weapons in this, and I won't explain what they are. There's a distraction device in here if you ever need to create a quick distraction to be able to get away from a certain situation. There is communications equipment in here. So we spared no expense. We got really good communications equipment for you as well. All in all, we spent nearly $600 on the bag that I'm going to give away right now to one of the callers. So we already have, and again, if you submitted a question via the phone, hopefully you also put it into the form that's on the page there, because that's where we're going to for a random draw of the person that submitted a tip tonight. So you have to submit a tip. It can't be a question. You've got to provide something of value to everybody. And so I want you to go ahead, and we're going to go ahead and do that right now. And I'm not looking. I don't know these people. I am putting my finger down. And the first winner of the scram bag is, it looks like Gene from Henderson, Nevada. And Gene from Henderson, Nevada, so congratulations. You won the first scram bag tonight. We have one more to give away, everybody. It's going to be at the very end of the call. And actually, Gene has a, let's see, well, I'll go ahead and read Gene's tip as well. Gene says, I learned to pick locks as a hobby. I made a lock pick set from a bent nail and a paper clip. I practice on all kinds of locks. If I have to escape while pursued, I can pick a lock and hide quietly behind a locked door that has no damage evidence. Wow, that's a great tip, Gene. I think a lot of people don't think in terms of being able to pick locks for this type of situation. So you're already ahead of the game if you're actually practicing that sort of stuff. And Gene brings up a really good point, because if you are being pursued, or even if you have to lay low somewhere and you have to break down a door to be able to get into a building, or you find yourself, you have to break a window to get in, even if people aren't tracking you, if they come by and they see that a door is damaged and that they can get into that building, they might come in just because they think, oh, let's go see what's inside of here, what we can take from here. So if you can pick a lock and lock it behind you, then somebody that's going by, number one, they won't notice it as much, whereas they might notice a broken-in door, and if they are tracking you, they'll think that that's where you went in. Or they're going to go by, if they even try the door handle, if it's locked, they're going to go on to some place that is easier to get into. So it's a very, very effective skill to be able to pick up and practice. And Gene's done really even gone even further than that, because if you can find a bent nail and a paper clip, which isn't too hard to find if you're out rummaging through stuff, and especially if you're around an area that's been boarded up and there's refuse around and things like that, you should be able to find things that you can be able to gosh, Gene, I'd like to know how the hell you're using a bent nail and paperclip to do this stuff. It's really good stuff. So Gene, congratulations on winning the first scram bag tonight. We've got one more to give away later on, and looking forward to giving that away. So right now, let's go ahead and get back to the calls. And the next person that I have on right now is, the last four is 2471. Hello, you're on the air. Last four, the phone number is 2471.
Hello? Sorry.
Yes, hello, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got actually a couple here. Actually, a couple of the ones I had already got given. A lot of good stuff given me for doing this whole thing. Big ones that I haven't heard yet are, if you're being pursued, no one ever looks up. If it's possible to go somewhere high, I've used that a lot and got a few friends who do as well. If it's possible to go up fire escapes and things like that, people have a tendency to look for things either on the ground or at somewhere below head level and tend to look up. And also, if you do duck into an alley or something, stay still. Quick movements, your peripheral vision is programmed to catch them. And so quick movements will catch people's eye.
Very good stuff. I mean, movement, it definitely, I mean, it just subliminally, even if people aren't looking, movement tends to catch our eyes. So really good tips. Thanks for calling with those. Okay, the next caller is, last four is 1028. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, I actually got several. I heard a lot of people getting on with tips about ducking into the alley, being still. What, as a hunter, you learn to track and look for things on the ground, like was brought up in the last comment. I know while I'm out, especially in the city, I don't wear my boots. Being in the military, I have combat boots. They're sturdy and stiff. I do wear a flat bottom treadless sole, like someone mentioned the hunted earlier. Your body's tendency to displace your weight into the soil usually brings out the treads, and if you wear the flat bottoms, you tend to displace your weight a little bit more evenly. You start walking on the ball of your feet, and it's a little bit more distorted. Also, I think the last thing I'd do as far as escaping into, or away from a crowd rather, is trying to, like was brought up earlier, push against the crowd in any way, form, or fashion. It's a little bit more dangerous, but
could also help. You may fall down and get trampled if you're not too careful, but try to get below the eye level of the crowd. That way, if you trip somebody, that's one more person down to block your way. And again, use the motion of the crowd to try to get away. One more thing that I would bring up is, like was mentioned earlier, is knowledge is your best tool. Take a first aid class. I'm a combat medic. I've performed my job in the field and in combat as well. And it's very easy in that kind of situation to be injured. And once you're injured, a little bloodstream, a little blood flow can weaken you. And always stay hydrated. That's the number one, the number one tip I think I have.
Yeah, simple but powerful, huh? Good stuff. And a lot of people, take first aid not for granted because most people haven't gone through a first aid course, but especially like a combat medic course. The last thing you want to do is if you're with your family or you're with somebody and they get shot during a riot or they get injured or stabbed or something like that, it's a very helpless feeling to be there watching them die and not being able to do anything because you don't know what you're doing. So even just something that's quick and powerful, like a combat medic type course, is a really, really powerful tool to have in your preparedness thing. So thanks so much. Appreciate those.
Before I go,
yes.
When you brought that up, I'll go ahead and tell everybody here. I'm sure some people know it already, but as a combat medic, we're taught stop blood loss first. And something I always carry in especially my bug out bag, or is kind of weird as it sounds, I have a little fanny pack. Go to the brigade quartermaster shop or to rangerjoes.com and order a cat tourniquet, just one. If you need more than that, you can improvise. But that one combat tourniquet, the cat or combat application tourniquet, can save somebody's life. And then from there, if you manage to get them to help, you can take that and use it again if need be. However, you should never, in that kind of situation, never go to the hospital if you can avoid it, for the simple fact that if you've seen the zombie movies, the biggest places where the injured and the sick are taken, the damaged, are going to be the hospitals. Don't go to the supermarkets, like was mentioned earlier. Don't go to any public location, especially not. Churches tend to be a place of congregation. And like you said, with the race riots, that could be a focus of attack. A lot of people are becoming very aggressive towards other sects of religion, just in the way in the old days. That could be a focal point of the riot or the march.
Good point. Very good points. Really good stuff. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Really good tips there. Boy, we're getting some really great stuff in tonight. I really appreciate everybody calling in. We still have the lines loaded up, and I'm still here for you, so we're going to keep going. We've got let's go ahead and move right on to the next one. The last four is 0520. 0520. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, is this me?
It is you.
Oh, good. So I'm a psychologist, and I teach deep survival. And one of the things that many of your callers are touching on that survivalists underestimate is that in an adverse situation, they've demonstrated over and over again, it's not what's in your pocket and it's not what's in your head. It's what's in your heart in terms of how prepared are you to be able to deal with that situation. There's a lot of really good books your readers might like to start thinking and imagining about how they would cope, everything from 1 second after, which talks about an EMP situation, to deep survival, who lives, who dies, and why. And what they find is most people, when there is a situation that shifts the pattern of how their regular life goes, they freeze. Plane wreck, EMP pulse, war breaks out, anything that people are not used to, they lose precious time where they could respond because they'd never even anticipated that it could occur. So one of the best things, and it doesn't cost anything even, is to start to imagine basically any conceivable situation that you might find yourself in. It's sort of like the special forces where they get trained. You walk into a room, you find three exits. Not because you're paranoid, but because you're awake and you're paying attention. So to start to actually walk through your life and look at all the different situations that occur, if your car didn't work, what would you do? the store is closed, what would you do? ATM doesn't work, what would you do? And to make it almost an adventure, you know, that they've got a game now called the worst-case scenario game.
Yeah, right.
And so
yeah.
If you make it more of a game, sometimes survivalists or preppers get this bad reputation as being a group of people that are escaping to Montana with their 8 closest gun-toting buddies, you know? And it really isn't about that. It's about being awake and aware and paying attention and anticipating. Because if you anticipate, you can live a completely normal life in the city. But you have more options than almost anybody else. You can bug in, you can bug out, you've got multiple ways to, you know, respond. You've thought about things. You are not going to be one of the people that ends up with maybe something in their pocket or their head, but they are completely unprepared for their circumstances.
Great information. I'm so glad you touched on me. And what is your occupation?
I'm a psychologist, and I actually teach deep survival.
There must be like three of you on the planet.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of us. Well, people in my field are interested in pathology, not wellness. So when you're really interested in resiliency in human beings, where you see it most evidenced is you're in the middle of the Amazon jungle, you get lost. Who lives, who dies? You know,
yeah.
A plane goes down. Who lives, who dies? There's stuff you can't prepare for, like an asteroid hitting you, and you shouldn't worry about it. But the stuff that you can prepare for, they know why, you know, the disasters, when they've looked back historically, like the Titanic, and they wonder why so many people died, why were the lifeboats launched half full, you know why? They know why. I don't know if you or your listeners know why.
Go ahead.
Denial.
Was that denial?
People didn't believe the boat was sinking.
Yeah.
And
well, even looking at like 9/11, there were people that, you know, stood
denial.
In the buildings watching the other
yep.
building burn, because look what's happening to that building. That, you know, it's denial
and
of
psychologists
that.
Psychologists who study this stuff, we know that that is the human instinct. That is a normal human response to an unanticipated adverse condition. It's freezing. People go almost into a trance state. So really, just like you get on the plane and you say, okay, if this plane goes down, how many seats between me and the first exit? Do I have a flashlight? You know, if the lights don't come out, I'm not going to get anything like my carry-on, which kills a lot of people. I'm just going to walk and get there. You know, when I go into a hotel room, do I know how to get out without using the elevator? You know, when I'm in a strange city, you know, do I know the back roads like some of your people? Do I have any way of knowing that? Most people just wait, and an adverse condition comes along that they never considered, and they die.
Yeah.
And 9/11 is a really good example. The stories that came out of that, there was one guy that was a hero. I think his name was Rick, and he was widely, he died in 9/11, but he was part of J.P. Morgan or something. He was a security officer. He had those people practicing an emergency event like every week, and everybody thought he was a crazy nut. This particular organization, I believe they didn't lose, they lost 2 people who wouldn't leave their desk, but this Rick guy, he got everybody out. It was one of the only organizations that didn't lose a soul.
Well, I'm so glad that you called in. I mean, because here's the thing, is that so many people, especially preppers, I mean, they can wrap their head around things like, I might have to, you know, there might be a natural disaster and I need to survive in place. I might, you know, get, there might be a plane crash or something like that. I mean, even something like that, as rare as it might be, is typically the type of a scenario that people wrap their heads around. However, a lot of people, and one of the callers even said it, you know, I live out in the wilderness, these are things that I don't normally think about. It goes into that. Well, it'll never happen to me. It happens on the news.
Well, it's denial. It's the Titanic. I don't believe the boat can sink.
Right. Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, if you and I are driving down the freeway, and you and I have both considered either a solar flare, which knocks out the grid, or, you know, a detonation of a nuke, we've thought about what happens if an EMP pulse hits. Our cars die. We pull to the side of the road. We know what just happened. What does everybody else do?
Yeah.
It's the panic and the unknown that kills people most of the time. Versus, hey, was an EMP pulse, here's my plan, I know what I'm doing, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, or even just the next step in most people's minds is, well, who's going to come and take care of this for me?
Yeah, like, let me sit and wait for the guy on the white horse.
Right, because I know the police, I mean, the police or the government, the military have got to have this figured out, so...
Well, we look at Katrina, and, like, speaking of denial, what part of somebody else is going to save you?
Yeah, exactly.
Seems really obvious.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff. Thanks so much for calling in. I really, really appreciate that. And the other thing about it is that preparedness, you know, we talk about this kind of fear factor, the, you know, not being prepared is what brings about fear. If you know what your actions are going to be, if you know what you can do, then, and, you know, especially from, you know, our organization started out as mostly a combatives organization. We've branched out now to tactical firearms training and preparedness training, survival training. But from the standpoint of what I know best, which is combatives, a lot of people, I mean, I know the number one question that most people have, most guys have especially, is, well, how would I defend myself if I were facing somebody who were twice as big as me mm-hmm. and twice as strong as me? And that fear comes from not knowing the power that you have and the weaknesses that they have and how very, very simple it is to take somebody that is twice as strong as you and just crumple them up within a couple of seconds if you know a few things.
Well, and Aikido is based on that. And, again, it's, you know, that even a smaller woman can defend themselves against a larger force if they know how to turn that disadvantage into an advantage. But it's knowledge again.
Yeah.
So, you know, the three rules that we always tell our adult patients when they're scared are, A, get all the information you can about anything you worry about. B, do everything you can about anything you worry about. Take all the control you can back into your own hands. C, never worry alone. So people that are preppers in this way, they walk around a whole lot less scared than most people, not paranoid.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you calling in tonight. Very, very good stuff.
Yeah. Right. You bet. Thank
you. Yep. And I know I'm going to have a bunch of you guys out there. They're thinking, this is the perfect woman. Please give me your phone number. And no, I'm not going to do it. Sorry. Let's see. The next caller is 5911. And hold on a second. I've got to undo your. There we go. 5911. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
We're pretty much homebound here, and I don't know. Guns would probably be a little too complicated for us under stress. So what we do is we have blocks that fit very solid doors. Either you can close the doors completely or allow them to come ajar. And I have Easy Off heavy-duty oven cleaner with the nozzle drilled out to 200 thousandths and a straw added and a piece of duct tape to hold it in, and then I cut it off so I always know which way the thing is aimed. And then I can spray it through the crack in the door, and I also keep 2 gallons of vinegar on hand to keep the person from going blind if I can.
So you're saying, so you're in the house, and then if somebody were to try and get in the house, like a home invasion type of a thing, then the block stops the door?
That is correct. I have holes in the floor. You can drop a block in it, which will either snug against the door completely, or you could back it up a little bit so that it can come ajar, and you can spray heavy-duty oven cleaner with a straw. You drill it out to 200 thousandths and put a straw in there, duct tape the straw in, and you cut it off so you know which, it increases the flow and you know which way it's aimed all the time.
Yeah.
And then I mean, it's, believe me, it's something else. And then 2 gallons of vinegar on hand to try and keep them from going blind if I can.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because it's also a very good improvised weapon that somebody can use in a situation where you might have to find something that you can improvise with, even if you're out. If you're not homebound, but you're out and about and you need something that you can grab and be able to use for fending people off. So good stuff. Thanks so much.
It's inexpensive, too. They got it at the grocery store. So
yeah,
it's something we can do, and it's highly effective. Lord, up in heaven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Good stuff. Thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Yep. Okay, the next caller I have. You know, I noticed when I first came on this evening that Manny, you were on, it looks like you were on the call earlier tonight. And I'm wondering if you're still on. If you are still on, I'd like you to call in. You are actually, we're chosen for our ISCQC community leader for preparedness. So I'd love to get you on the call tonight, too, if you're still listening. So, okay, the next caller that we have right now, though, is the last four is 5832. 5832, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. This is Tim Vallejo, California.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, the first thing I wanted, you raised a question earlier. I have a suggested answer for the question about higher low profile in your home.
Yeah.
Well, to my mind, it's always easier to go from a low profile to high profile than the other way around. So if I am in my house and, you know, there's riots or social chaos going on around me, I would prefer to keep a low profile and not attract attention to my house. And then until the point that people get too close. So if somebody's, like, walking up my path or looking, peering in through my windows, at that point I'll make it very clear I'm home and I'm armed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's, so that kind of solves that quandary is, because if I went high profile first, well, then it's too late. I can't go low profile. I've already, you know, tipped my hand.
Really good point. Excellent point.
Now, my tip is something you'd have to plan ahead and do like now, but as we learn from New Orleans, Katrina, Cairo, Egypt, the big problem in social chaos is being able to travel to get in or out of these areas. So my plan for that would be to like join Civil Air Patrol, which is it's a volunteer organization, it's a civilian organization, but it is an auxiliary unit to the U.S. Air Force. By joining, you're not signing up for the military. You cannot be deployed anywhere. You are a civilian. However, you do get issued a government ID. It's a military-style ID. You also have the right to wear uniforms, which are basically the same as the United States Air Force uniforms, just different insignia. And with those tools, with that ID and that uniform, if you are, you know, when you have the social chaos situations, government typically will cordon off, contain the area. And if you're trapped in there, you're usually considered guilty until proven innocent if you want to get out. Hmm. So having that government ID, that military-looking ID, you know, if you're confronted with an unrelenting, inflexible, you know, military person who doesn't want to let you out, you can just say, look, I've gotten a call from my commanding officer. I need to report to my FBO for an emergency mission. You need to let me out. And with that ID, and possibly even with the uniform, if you carried it in your car, that would be very convincing, and they would most likely let you out. It could also be used if you need to get in to rescue a family member or a loved person, and you need to get into that violent area to get them out. Having those credentials would, you know, allow you to do that, and it's simple to join. Anybody can join Civil Air Patrol, any civilian. And, you know, it's also something that you might find enjoyable if you did join.
Tim, that's some great stuff, man. Really, really good stuff because, you know, one of the things that we were developing, we were doing research and stuff with our survival team was situations where the military does come in or the law enforcement does come in and they have different checkpoints that are available there and they need to keep people out or in or wherever, then how do you bypass those checkpoints? Either to get in, like you said, to save people or to be able to bypass an area and, you know, get through a checkpoint of some kind. And that's a great, great point. Very, very good stuff, man.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Take care. And the next, let's see, next caller we have, hold on 1 second, is, the last four is 4344. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Panther from Arizona. I just want to say thank you, Mr. Anderson. This is really awesome what you're doing here, and I'd like to thank all the participants. And
thank
I really
you so
don't
much.
Know. If to have, you're welcome. I don't have a lot to offer for tips because I came here to learn. However, in a riotous situation, instinctively, I would say don't allow yourself to get boxed in and maybe travel around the outlying perimeter if possible. And, of course, at night, don't shadow yourself. And I have a question for you. What is the one thing that I could do to protect my family overall, the one important thing? What would you suggest?
That's a very good question. I always take as my foundational protection tool is, and you know, this is debatable, we could get all philosophical about this, with the brain, in that your survivor's mindset is absolutely the very, very most critical thing that you have to have. We've talked about different aspects of it tonight, just from the standpoint of knowing that you're prepared to be able to give yourself confidence so that you don't panic in a situation, so that you're not in denial of what's happening. But then also, when you are confronted with either, whether it's a robber, whether it's a home invader, whether it is a looter, whatever it is, that it's a lot more difficult to be able to take action against somebody than it is to just pray for mercy or hope that they're not going to take things to another level. This is especially difficult for women. We just did an entire broadcast in the ISCQC this month with a combatives expert. She's a woman who works with a lot of women, and women are naturally nurturers, and like you said, you're protecting your family, and so a woman's instinct is usually to protect her children, protect her children, to be a nurturer in a way, rather than a protector as far as like a hunter. And so it's especially difficult for women mentally to be able to strap on that survivor's mindset, except for when somebody's going for the child. So one of the things with survivor's mindset is to be able to think in terms of somebody is coming for your child, you would do anything in the world to stop them. And that includes that even if your child isn't there, you have to be able to fight back to defend yourself with that same type of ferocity. So that's one thing. The other thing I'd say is you need the tools to be able to do that. You've got to be able to know the points on a person's body that with just a minimal amount of pressure, with just a minimal amount of force, can completely take them out of the fight, can completely debilitate them in a split second. And when you know those things, it gives a sense of confidence as well. And the other thing I'd say is, you know what, I like guns. And I think that it is ultimately the great equalizer. Why go hand-to-hand with somebody if you have an instrument that will be able to put the odds in your favor? In a survival situation, there's no such thing as fighting fair. There's no such thing as fighting fair, especially when it's life or death. So I highly recommend that people do take some sort of firearms training and have a firearm available if they can safely keep it, especially if you have children around. You want it to be very, very safe. But those are the things I go to. You've got to be able to look at the entire survival equation. So good stuff. Thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Okay, the next caller that we have, looks like calling in from Skype, actually. So I won't give your full Skype name, but it's Bravo88 is the end.
That's me.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Hi. Yep. So my tip has to do with when I was living in Los Angeles, I was actually there during the Rodney King riot.
Wow.
And I worked in downtown Los Angeles, and this is something I've had in mind since then. When driving and stopping at traffic lights, always leave one car length between you and the vehicle in front of you so as not to get blocked in case you need to make a sudden vehicle maneuver.
Yeah, that's a perfect point. And most people, if you look when you're driving, I think if people become more aware of how they themselves drive, it tends to be, you know, I don't know why people think that going up an extra 4 feet is going to get you closer to home. It's just some weird little thing that we have, but absolutely. And this is something that a lot of people that are in that are into executive protection, that are bodyguards. I've done some bodyguard work in the past as well, and it's one of those things where, especially if you have your client with you, you give yourself that space, because if you are attacked, you don't want to be bumper to bumper with people in front of you and behind you, because you can pretty much guarantee the person behind you is going to be right up on top of you, and you're not going to be able to back out of something. So you've got to be able to do that. The other thing I would add to yours is that when you're at a stoplight, especially, look for, if you were to have to get out of there, if you were to have to go to the left or right, which way would you go? Where would be your escape route? And it's constantly being vigilant of where is my escape route. We've talked about that in a few times tonight, whether it's you're in a building, whether it's you're out in the open and there's a crowd there, looking and staying aware of where your exit points are at all times, whether on foot, in the car, as you bring up now, is all really, really powerful stuff. So really great tip. And thanks for calling in via Skype, too. This is a new feature of our system that allows people to call in by Skype, and so that's very cool. I know it looks like you've been on for a long time, too, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, take care. Okay, we've got somebody else here with Skype here, too, in a little bit here, but let's see. The next caller looks like the ending is 7059. 7059. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, this is me. You hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
All right, yeah. Well, my tip was for, like, the riot situation. I didn't really hear anybody say it, and I'm surprised. I'm not the type of person to place myself in the middle of a large group, you know, and because, I mean, just to me, large group of dumb people, you know what I'm saying, it just seems like a lot of chances for something stupid to happen. So if I was anybody, I would stay on the outskirts as much as possible. And even with a riot group breaking off, there's always a point where it's like amped up and you can tell that the stress level is raised. And that would be the time that I would take off if I were you. And I heard somebody talking about weapons too, like if they're in a place that doesn't allow you to keep like weapons on you. And I heard a lady before mention a flashlight. There's actually a website that sells a flashlight that's also a 1,000,000-volt stun gun. And it's... That's a handy tool to have, but I mean, it's actually a functional flashlight, so, you know, that's just the thing. I'm at work, so I can't really get into stuff. I really got to get back to work, but,
okay.
Yeah. And I heard you alluding to earlier as far as people who are martial arts-minded, target-focused training is invaluable. I mean, as far as, because I heard dude mention that his martial arts training, all those fancy moves go out the window. Target-focused training is nothing fancy, and, from the first video you see, you'll, like, wonder where it's been all your life, you know, and that's going to be a very valuable tool when you have to put somebody down in your way, because you were talking about the greatest weapon is your brain, and, you know, target-focused training teaches you how to shut off that brain, so you render them, you know, non-functional, and, I mean, that's all I really have to say.
Yeah, good stuff. I appreciate you calling in, and even when you're on duty there, so thanks so much, and, yeah. Big fan of Tim's stuff there. Tim's a good friend of mine. He's got a great, great program, and I highly recommend checking out his stuff. It's target-focused training. Okay, we'll go to the next person. It's a wireless caller. I appreciate you guys calling in on your cell phones and using up your minutes for me. I really appreciate that. The last four of this caller is 8177. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? This is Brian. I'm calling from South Louisiana. I had a few points I wanted to get. You had said something about creating a diversion or something in a mob situation.
Yeah.
You can actually if you can actually have the tool to do it, you can open up a fire hydrant, which would, you know, if there's fires around, it's certainly going to help, but it also create a huge jet of water, maybe able to escape that way. Another point I wanted to make. One former guy said something about even on a rail line or a transmission right away. Well, that wouldn't really work in New Orleans. I've been through the train. You have to understand, New Orleans is surrounded by water. But that did make me think about the fact that taking to the inland waterways might be a really good way to get out of town, simply because of the fact that nobody is on it, nobody is taken that way. They're safer to travel, easy access to natural resources, and most inland waterways are well connected into a system. And this is not just true of Louisiana, but other states as well. And, you know, anything, you know, a 14-foot bass boat would be plenty. You know, it's something you could paddle. You could certainly, you know, carry some survival goods with you. The other point I wanted to make, I made these hurricane screens. After Katrina, there was a lot of damage to my windows. And it occurred to me that one of the big problems, if something came through the window or somebody tried to break in my window, it could really, really, you know, create a bigger problem than just damaged windows. And I made these wire mesh, I made these hurricane screens out of wire mesh stapled to 2x4 frames, in which I screwed to the inside of the windows during Hurricane Gustav. And that actually kept large debris out of my house. But I shot myself out of the house one time, and it would have took a sawzall to get through there and get in. And I thought, yeah, just for an intermediate, quick way to protect your home from somebody breaking in this situation, that would be cheap and easy to build. And you just screw those into the wall around, into the frame around your window. And your doors, of course, you could just pretty much screw 2x4s across if you really couldn't, you know, didn't want to go outside. And another thing, there was a lot of looting and stuff during Katrina, and one man mentioned those caltrops. You could easily throw a bunch of roofing nails out in your yard. That would discourage people from even approaching your house. Get a few of those in their shoes and their feet, and they're going to say, all right, I give up. I'm going somewhere else. Those are the three points I wanted to make. Stick with the wind and waterways thing because you're in a boat. You don't even have to have any skills. Just get a paddle and get a boat, and you have access to natural resources. And if you could, anywhere that waterway is accessible to, you could, you know, put yourself anywhere in high away just to, you know, during the height of the disaster or what have you. And as well, you know, at some point you could always get out and walk or get a vehicle or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Great point there, man.
I appreciate it.
Very good stuff. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. And I see that Manny has answered the call. So, Manny, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you here. And actually, I kind of screwed up. I said that you were the community leader for the preparedness one, but actually, and actually I didn't get a response back from you yet, but you're actually the chosen community leader for the firearms training and tactics community that we have. So I went ahead and unmuted you. Are you there?
I'm here, and run that by me one more time.
Yeah, remember we have the ISCQC community leader that we put a call out for?
Right.
And you had applied for your first choice, which was the firearm training.
Right.
And so we put out an email to you and hadn't heard back from you yet, but you were chosen for...
I did not get the email.
There you go. Well, now you're getting it firsthand.
Firsthand.
So,
Great show. Awesome turnout.
Yeah.
Everybody has been giving in a lot of good tips. As far as one tip that I'll reiterate, that your best tool is your mind. All the rest of the tools is what you're going to use. Or your best weapon is your mind. Let me rephrase that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, wherever you do live, find out what the best alternative exits and entrances to where you live. And as far as communications go, one of the best is still, one of the earliest is the two-way radio, CB. And I'll put it out there, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. And we need to get in touch, so send me an
yeah.
We'll actually send you an email follow-up here, but we'll get you going with that also. And so thanks
yeah.
so much, man. I appreciate it. And
I appreciate it, too.
Yeah.
And I was wanting to get in on the ladies call, but I was unable to get to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a good broadcast that we did. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, and the other thing that that brings up with the CB, because, and I'll go ahead and I muted you back out, Manny, so got you off here now. But you know, a lot of times when there's, especially during a chaotic event and crisis, you're not going to have access potentially to your cell phone. Now, chances are you probably will, but you don't want to have to rely on it. CB radio is actually a really good alternative for people to use besides the cell phone, because a lot of times what you can do is you can get information on where riots are happening, where there are disturbances, safe egresses that are out there, because most people don't have a CB radio. So it's a very, very, it's a great communications tool for you to have to be able to stay abreast of what's actually happening out there for people that are out there on the ground or driving around. So good stuff. Okay, the we've got still some time left here, so we're going to keep going because we keep getting some great stuff in here. The last four of this caller is 3003. Go ahead. Hello, last four of the phone number is 3003.
Hi, this is Bryce in Georgia.
Hey, Bryce.
So the tip that I have, a couple of people have already touched on similar thing. It's be sure and make allies wherever you can, or look for allies wherever you can. You know, one of the gentlemen mentioned joining a neighborhood watch group. Another mentioned, you know, knowing your neighbors so that if someone was going to take advantage of someone, you know, it would most likely be someone they didn't know, or at least not someone they were friends with. You know, that's great, and a lot of times in the prepper or the survivalist communities, we tend to be sort of self-reliant, and we want to protect our family, maybe not let anybody else in our community know what necessarily resources we have. But definitely be on the lookout for anybody that could help you through a particular situation. You want to know people with certain skills. You want to know people with certain resources. Even if it's just something immediate, you know, you're in a crowd that turns violent or you know, there's a maybe not a natural disaster, but some sort of disturbance. You need to, you know, you have maybe a car gets, you know, somebody is wedged between a car and a building, or a dumpster is pushed over on somebody. If you're alone, or if it's, you know, you're only with one other person and that person is trapped, you may need help to get that person out. And don't be afraid to ask for that help. One of the things we're taught in emergency preparedness is to organize people. You can pretty much look around and find people who have the same mindset as you do in a crowd. One of the things that I notice is just out in normal everyday life, I'll see people with a flashlight on their belt, and I'll think, man, that person, you know, they probably are not just carrying a flashlight. They probably have a pretty survival-oriented mindset. But that's just an example. You know, you're in a crowd that's starting to get rowdy, starting to get violent. You know, maybe you need to get out of somewhere. You need to move something to do it, or you need to get over top of something large. You can look around and see other people that might have that same idea. If you can't get out by yourself, don't be afraid to grab that person and say, hey, look, you want to get out of here? It may take, you know, pushing a dumpster out of the way or pushing a dumpster in front of an alley to get, you know, keep you from being in the same area with the rowdy crowd. That also goes in less urban situations, more rural situations. I'm from a very small town, and we kind of know everybody, you know, everybody in town, and if there was a major disaster, we wouldn't be so much worried with being attacked, but more with the stream of refugees that would be coming in out of the big cities. So one thing that you may want to keep in mind is if you're one of those outsiders, if you're one of those people that doesn't look like everyone else or doesn't talk like everyone else, you're going to need somebody to vouch for you in a small town. So it's always great to humanize yourself and to have things in common with people that you can draw on when you need their help.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great information that you stuck in there, so I hope everybody listened to that because there's some really great tips in there. Thanks so much for calling in. Really good stuff.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Yep. Wow, we've got so much great information in tonight. Just I'm really, really happy with the turnout and everybody calling in. I really appreciate it. We've got a little bit of time left here before we kick it off here. We still have 41 people that are in the queue. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to everybody here, but we are going to keep going as long as we can here, and then I'm going to give away the last scram bag that we have. Somebody to join Gene here, so let's just keep it going. I've got a wireless caller. It looks like the last four is 3027. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Lindy.
Hi, Lindy.
Hi. I hadn't heard anybody mention the possibility of escaping through sewers.
Hmm. Talk about hiding in them, but not escaping through them, no. That's a
well,
good point.
Yeah, you know, I'd do whatever I had to do. If there's any way I could get a manhole cover off, I would get it off and get inside. You can get it off with a lifting key. Actually, on ehow.com, you can look up how to open manholes, and they'll tell you exactly how to open one. And I also found another site that sells a lifting key on Titan-ALU. I'm sure that stands for aluminum.com. So that's a couple of different things that you could do. It's a possibility. I would look for maps of sewers. I mean, if I had to, if I could get into a manhole, you know, if you can find sewers that are big enough to walk through, that's a route out. I'd try anything. Another thing, for my tip, what I'm going to suggest is for core body temperature to lower it. I don't know about you, but if I'm in a riot, if I'm on the run, I'm going to get hot fast, and that's going to slow me down. So what I would do is use an old fisherman's trick, and that is, well, they actually make rope bracelets, and they wet them down, and as the water evaporates, it cools your body. You put it on your wrist, that's your pulse points. So if you can keep your pulse points cool. But I have another idea, because you're not likely to have a rope bracelet in your bug-out bag. So what I would do is I would carry a long-sleeve T-shirt, cut the sleeves off, cut the sleeves in half, okay? And then you roll each quarter up, wet it, put one on each wrist and one on each ankle. Then take the rest of the body of the T-shirt and throw it around your neck. That's going to keep all of your pulse points cool, plus your neck.
That's a great point. In fact, one of the things we found when we were shopping around for gear for the bag was that they've even started doing that now in the camping section. There's a it looks like a bandana, but it actually goes around your neck specifically for that purpose. You wet it, put it around your neck, and because of the pulse points, it keeps your body cool.
Right, it's evaporation cooling.
Yeah, exactly. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
That's something you can throw in your bug-out bag or, you know,
yeah.
You might throw one in your car. If I had nothing but a windbreaker, if it was lined, I'd rip that lining out, wet it, do the same thing.
Yeah. Good stuff. Thanks so much for calling in. Good tip.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, let's keep going here. We've got, the last four is 3808. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff. This is Josh Pollard. Can you hear me?
Hey, Josh. Yeah, I can hear you.
Outstanding. Good. I wanted to relate that I'm a military member and I was assigned to Clark Air Base, and
awesome.
You were specifically talking about urban riot environments and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And in particular, we had what they call lightning rallies, where the locals would pay 200 students $2 or $3 a piece. And they would come in front of the base and have signs and that type of thing and create an instant riot-type situation in a minute. You know, and you could be coming in and out of the base or in and out of the embassy, and it would happen immediately. And for the most part, on one occasion, I had to actually go into a store and wait until the riot was over, more or less, or the lightning rally was over, because pretty much all they wanted to do was take a picture and have some pictures to put into the paper and that type of thing and have something to go on CNN News. But you could apply that to a riot-type situation in any urban environment. You either go into a store, a business, an apartment building, or that type of thing, and wait out the situation or assess the situation and determine if you need to go in some other direction, out a back door, or whatever. So that's one of the first things that I would do if I was encountering some type of an urban chaos situation when I thought there might be some threat of violence.
Yeah, and I like the last part of that the best, because if you are in a store or something like that, when riot does break out and people just start to go crazy, a lot of times what they do is they turn to big things they can smash. That might be cars, that might be plate glass windows
for
stores. They start going in, and it's like when they know that the police aren't there and they can get away with pretty much anything, they start looking at what can I take advantage of this opportunity, and so it might be the cash register or whatever. So what I like about what you said the most is if you're in a store, You can sit there and wait it out, but you might become a target at some point there. So that back room is, seems to be the best little egress there. It's better to wait it out in a back alley or try and find a way away from or another way into the base or your home, another way to home or whatever it might be. And really take it as, you know, I think we've talked about it a couple times tonight, but, you know, it's the denial factor. And,
sure.
And this is a really good example of if you stand there watching a riot, it doesn't have to just be in a store. This can apply to anybody, anywhere. And you get that, we've talked about this in so many different angles. So you hear something going on and you see smoke and curiosity gets the best of you and you go to check it out. And then you're standing there on the outside of the crowd watching the events unfold, which a lot of people do. They like to watch things that are happening that are newsworthy. And it's that denial factor. Oh, well, this is contained here. It looks like, you know, the focus is on somewhere else until somebody turns around and sees you and says, there's one, or, hey, grab that guy. And all of a sudden, like, no, you guys don't understand. I'm just here to watch. Like, no, wrong story. So you've got to be able to be aware of what's happening. Don't get in denial that you won't be a target, and then take the appropriate action to just get the hell out of Dodge.
That's right. I agree.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Really, really appreciate you calling with that tip. Love to hear
no
from
problem.
Military.
Hey, thank you.
Yep. Okay, and we've got just a little bit of time left here. And it looks like the last four is 8979. Go ahead. Last four phone number is 8979.
Yes, Rick in Beaumont.
Hey, Rick.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight.
Yeah.
A couple things that I'd noted, you know, complete agreement with the psychologist in that, you know, you have to have that will to survive and to maintain that will to survive. Some examples are, you know, using family or ties at home to, you know, I work in an area about 30 miles away from home, and in here in Southern California, when we have a big quake, if and when it hits, I'll probably end up having to trek in. So one of the things that we've done is I formed a neighborhood watch group here in my little community, and we have actually held annual barbecues here and gotten everybody on board with being like-minded. So we've kind of set up the idea that, you know, we watch out for each other. We are in a very, very good neighborhood in that we've got at least five police officers and a couple of firefighters that live here in this area and a lot of Christian-minded people. So it's been very good for us. The other thing, too, is that, you know, as I think was mentioned earlier as well, you know, like I mentioned, if I have to, you know, hike out 30 miles to get back to my refuge here with my small community, I've got to be in shape to do that. And if you're not in shape, you're not going to be able to just, you know, bug out and go. You're going to get exhausted. You also need to be prepared, put your vehicle in a place where you can get access to it, and if not, be able to have a bailout bag with you to go.
Yeah, good point. I mean, if you if you're carting around a beer belly, don't consider that your like rations. Those don't count as survival rations. To be able to use belly fat as you know, kind of your long-term food storage thing. You're going to need to be in shape, whether it's to escape, whether it's to fight, whether it is to bug out, whether it's to be whatever. You really should take your besides just the obvious signs that you have a better quality of life. I mean, I'm also a fitness coach, so this is something near and dear to my heart. But you need to be in shape in order to survive, and you really will fare much, much better. Rick, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Really good stuff.
Welcome. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Okay, equipment's giving me a little bit of a problem here. Okay, the next caller, we've got enough time for just a couple more callers. We've got the last four here is 2631. 2631. Go ahead.
This is Blaine in Florida.
Hey, Blaine.
There have been a lot of great comments.
I think probably the biggest suggestion is having this phone call to begin with. Planning and preparedness outweighs most everything. But to touch on some things some other folks said, when I was raising my children, I tried like crazy to get them to be aware of their surroundings. What kind of different people did they see during the day? The red shirt concept.
Yeah.
It's always good to have it as a contest maybe with somebody else that you know, because they start to see things you didn't, and then you become aware of where your weakness is and then where your strengths are. And it's also good to know what can be a weapon, not only for you to use, but what can be used against you. If you know what can be used against you, it makes you that much smarter in the battle if it comes down to it. Someone told me the other day that if you mace and pepper spray are not a good deal because they're close quarter use only. The best thing is, like the gentleman mentioned, with the oven spray cleaner, or the better one, I think, is the wasp spray, because it's good up to about 20 feet and it's directional. You don't have to get up and close. You can stay a good distance away. Thinking about out-of-the-box things, whether it's a pen or a pencil, coffee mug you're carrying in your hand, anything can become a weapon if it's used properly. But thinking outside the box and understanding and planning, being prepared with that plan to execute the plan, is the only way you're going to be able to survive. That's it for me.
Yeah, good stuff. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. Very, very good stuff. Okay, let's see. it's another Skype call. So I'm going to just say the last four are Ushakov. Or is it left? Hello?
Hi, this is Anton from New Jersey.
Hey, Anton.
Hi, my tip's about something you can have with you, and I'd recommend having a pair of high-grip gloves. You can even get something like rubber-coated textured work gloves. And they're really great because, for one, they're tough and they protect your hands from scrapes when you're falling. You can also climb, lift heavy things. Like somebody said, you might need to lift the dumpster. It's much better if you have a good grip on that. And it's also great for catching things and pulling things out of other people's hands, like sticks, as well as holding on to whatever you're carrying.
Yeah, good point. I'll go ahead and mute you back. Al, thanks so much for that tip. It also comes in handy. That was a really good tip that somebody else had brought up before. Even if it's like leather gloves, something that's very, very, it's work-related, but it's very, very durable. If you're facing somebody that has a knife, having those gloves on is going to, potentially help you from getting cut. But also, one of the biggest things is just when you're in a situation where there's civil unrest, you might have blockades, or there might be like concertina wire, things like that. You might need to get over a barbed wire fence or something. Those gloves are going to make it really, really. It's going to be a necessity really to try and get past, especially concertina wire. Any GI that's ever had to lay concertina wire before knows that that stuff will just tangle you up. So you need a pair of gloves just to be able to deal with it. So it's one of the best things. And, again, we're talking about a lot of stuff that's lightweight that can be carried with you, very, very accessible, that's going to really help you out a lot. We've got time for one more call, and then we're going to go ahead and, again, I want to apologize to everybody that wasn't able to get on tonight. I mean, we still have 40-some people that are waiting to get on. And I really appreciate your patience with this. I'm sorry I won't be able to get on. If we've had such a great response to this. I want to let everybody know we do this like once a week in different forms of survival in the ISCQC. If you're interested at all in our organization, it's at iscqc.org, and we do this once a week in different formats, whether it's tactical firearms training, survival training, combatives training, general Q&A stuff when it comes to combatives. We've got a lot of great training over there. So if you like this kind of a format where you can get on and discuss just like we're doing right now, then I suggest checking us out. We've got a really great organization. We've been around for a long time. So the last person that we have on the line here is the last four is 1844. Hello? Okay, the last four, the phone number is 1844.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Preston in Tennessee.
Hey, Preston, congratulations. You're the last caller.
I had done wrote off and said I wasn't going to get in.
Don't write me off yet.
I just wanted to throw a couple of comments in.
Yeah.
This has been very, very interesting tonight, and I've learned a lot. I have been a police officer, and I am on the rescue squad. And you can buy, you know, staying hydrated is one of the main things if you're out alone for a long time. That can be easily done. You'll run out of bottled water sooner or later.
Yeah.
But you can buy water filtering equipment that will filter lake, stream water. You can't filter chemically altered water. But cyst and giardia and stuff like that you can filter out. And there's some of them are inexpensive. Hooligan or something like that makes them for 10 or 15, 20 bucks. And then there are the real nice ones that have the pumps and all this other stuff go up in the hundreds of dollars. But the thing on the gun and facing a man and can you pull the trigger, I've been there in several situations. And it's not easy. I'm fortunate that I walked away from two of them. Because the other guy just had the same mindset I did. He just couldn't pull the trigger for something as stupid as we were in this for.
Yeah.
And that don't mean it may be an arrest. It may be just an argument between two people. And with people carrying guns, I am the mindset that if you were attacking my wife or going to shoot my wife, I wouldn't bat an eye. And I'd get a good night's sleep tonight. But you do have to realize you're altering the rest of your life when you pull that trigger.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of psychology to that that you can't get till you get in that situation. And if there's anybody out there listening that's been in that situation, they need to call in and talk about it because it is a difficult situation.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, I mean, so much of this is so much about mindset. We've talked about it in a few different ways tonight, but just being able to, you know, tap into what does you need to be able to prepare your mind and solidify your mind to be able to deal with all the tactics that we talk about. Tactics are great, but it all originates with, you know, are you able to have the mindset wrapped around it that you can actually, you know, do something about it. So great stuff. Really appreciate you calling in.
Can I throw one more thing in?
Yeah, please do.
And this is just another comment. I keep a pickup truck with a backpack that's got basically the water filter and I was telling you about. It's my survival kit for the rescue squad. But I also have a four-wheeler. I think people need to think of alternate transportation and mass hysteria. And I can load it in, and I do have a boat. Somebody mentioned the waterway. I wanted to do that, too, that I can hook behind it so I can go truck, four-wheeler, or boat. And if I had a horse, I'd do that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all these alternatives that people have are, you know, there's a lot more out there than just jumping in the old vehicle and then heading out of there. So good stuff. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, and yep. I enjoyed it.
Great stuff. Okay, everybody, I've got that's all the time we're going to have tonight. We've gone 2.5 hours now, and I really appreciate everybody's call. Again, I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to everybody. We still have, right now, we still have 30 people that are still lined up. A bunch of people dropped off because we knew we were going to get to it. But it's time to give away the final giveaway here for the Scram Bag. And again, this Scram Bag is almost $600 worth of equipment. We put it together specifically just for tonight to be able to give away. Gene was the first winner tonight from Henderson, Nevada, so congratulations, Gene. Now we have one other person to give the giveaway to. So I've got the list here. We're going through. I'm not looking. I'm putting my finger down. Again, it has to be a tip. So if I put my finger on something, so Okay, and it is... Okay, actually, this one was somebody that was just asking a question about the sound and audio, so that's not actually a tip. You have to have submitted a tip to be able to be qualified, so I'm going to go ahead and choose another person here. And that person is, looks like, Sean from Sacramento. Sean from Sacramento, congratulations, you won the last scram bag for tonight. And Sean did put in a tip. Sean's tip is, it says tip number three, so I don't know if Sean put in other tips or whatever, but Sean's tip is pepper spray for multiple attackers. This is from personal experience. I once worked in a very large bar dance club. There was a brawl one night involving 10 to 15 people made up of customers, bouncers, and whatever staff could help out. I was in the middle of it. Someone in the crowd just started spraying pepper spray over the melee. Things almost immediately shut down. People were rubbing their eyes instead of throwing punches. It also pulled people out of their drunken desire to fight back into reality. So if being pursued, harassed by multiple people, pepper spray could cover a large area with multiple attackers and is silent. It won't draw the attention that gunshots would. Although some will turn their nose up at non-lethal defense, pepper spray could have its uses during civil unrest. That's a very great point, and in fact, there's a reason why police and military lob tear gas out in the middle of the crowd is because it takes the fight out of you very, very rapidly. When you're facing multiple attackers, especially if you don't have a firearm on you and you're left with whatever you can pick up off the ground or whatever, it's hard to fight multiple attackers. Let's face it, it's hard enough to fight one person. When you have multiple people that are stomping away at you, it's a pretty damn dangerous situation. Pepper spray should not be dismissed as something for to give to your wife as a gift for her to keep in her purse. It's a very, very effective tool. It's why law enforcement carries it on their belt as well. It's very, very effective. And, you know, you can't be the type of person that says, well, you know, somebody can just fight through it or whatever. Even if they could fight through it, even if they still wanted to fight through it, they can't hit what they can't see. And, you know, especially if you're dealing with multiple attackers in a mass attack, then you need every advantage you can possibly get. So if you can take away their sight and take a few of them out of the fight, because here's the thing about mass attacks, is that if they can't see what's going on and they know that they have their buddies with them and that their assumption is, well, I can deal with my eyes and I can get out of the fight because I'm here with other people and I know they're going to fight for me or they're going to attack this guy. And get it. So most people are going to think that, especially if they can't see what's going on. So they're more than happy to just kind of keel over and deal with their own injury and let other people pick up the fight for them. Well, they could all do that. They could all do that. And by that time, you're already long gone. You can run away. You don't have to stand there and fight. So pepper spray is absolutely something that you should have. We use it in the SCARE kit, the active response kit that we use for the social chaos survival guide that we're coming out with. So that's a very, 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 very good thing. And so congratulations to Sean. So congratulations, Sean, on winning the last scram bag tonight. Look, everybody, this has been absolutely incredible. We've had just great tip after great tip. We had the lines were completely filled. So we had 2,200 people on the call tonight. Obviously, this is a very popular topic with people. We need to do this more often, so stay tuned. We will try and do more of this in the future. We do this once a month as Survival Talk Radio with the ISCQC, so if you want to check that out, you can go ahead and do that. And then we will have the recording for this available as well. So we're going to send out an email to everybody that was on the registration list. You'll be able to get a copy of this for you to have, so you don't have to worry about taking notes and everything. Really, really good stuff. And if you submitted the question or your tips via the form, thanks so much for that tips. We will go through those. We'll give credit where credit is due for people that have submitted something. If we use it in an article or something later on, we'll go ahead and give credit for it. So thanks so much for all the advice that everybody has had. It sounds like everybody got a lot out of it. I know I got a lot out of it, some really, really cool stuff that raised my eyebrow on more than one occasion. So it's really, really good stuff. So again, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody here. And everybody, everybody's off of you here. I just want to.
you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks. Great broadcast.
Okay, I went ahead and muted everybody back out. So thanks so much again, everybody, for coming out tonight and joining us. I know it's kind of late even on the East Coast and everything, so really, really appreciate it. And please, stay safe, stay trained, and survive.